This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
The New Yorker Radio Hour is supported by the Sympathizer podcast from HBO. From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr., The Sympathizer is the new HBO original limited series based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel of the same name. On the Sympathizer podcast, join host Philip Nguyen in conversation with the cast, crew, and author Viet Thanh Nguyen as they discuss the making of this historic series. Stream new episodes of HBO's The Sympathizer, Sundays exclusively on Max, and listen to The Sympathizer podcast wherever you listen to podcasts.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Trump launched his presidential campaign focusing on the issue of immigration. Mexican rapists, the wall. We don't need to rehash it all. But after his inauguration, arrests by Immigration and Customs Enforcement, ICE, increased very sharply. Undocumented immigrants began to live in real fear. Staff writer Jonathan Blitzer has covered immigration for us throughout this administration. And early on, back in 2017, he went to a church in Upper Manhattan to talk with a woman named Amanda Morales Guerra. And her story was particularly dramatic. Threatened with deportation, Amanda had taken her children and sought sanctuary in the church, where they lived for months.
What's been the hardest thing about staying here in this church for 3 months? More than 3 months.
Fue el día que las niñas fueron a la escuela.
She says the hardest part about being here was the day that my kids first went to school.
Que no pude ir con ellas.
And I couldn't take them. She could only lead them as far as the door.
Mm-hmm. Y muchas cosas de llevarlos
and all sorts of other things, like taking my girls to go to the doctor.
Se siente bien difícil.
It feels incredibly painful to be stuck inside here.
Dejar estrés a uno demasiado.
Gives you too much stress.
Mamita.
Pesa, baby.
¿Qué quieres? ¿Te quieres ir al baño?
Hacer pipí.
Mi bonita.
Anda, Isabel te va a llevar, Isabel
vamos,
te va a llevar.
Vamos.
Bonita, mami.
Do you ever want to step outside? ¿Tiene ganas de vez en cuando de salir a pisar fuera? O sea, a ver cómo.
Eso es de todos los días que tengo ganas de estar afuera.
I feel stuck in here. I feel
estar uno encerrado le da hasta náuseas.
Nauseous. Like I can't breathe.
Saber uno que no puede ni. Hay veces que siento que no puedo respirar.
I want to get outside. I want to almost have wings and fly away or just walk away outside to breathe the air outside.
Salir de aquí.
To get out of here.
Respirar aire.
To breathe the air.
Bueno, yo tengo esperanza de poder estar afuera con mis hijos.
I hope I can leave and be outside with my kids.
Y que mis hijos estudien acá.
That my kids can study here.
Y yo ser libre.
And that I can be free.
Es lo único que le pido a Dios yo.
That's the only thing I ask of God.
John, that was 2017. How much has changed since then?
I actually think on the whole, that level of commitment to the issue of immigration, it didn't abate at any point in the last 4 years. I mean, if one thing can be said of the Trump administration, it's that this administration on the issue of immigration came in with a laser-like focus and didn't really deviate at all. I mean, the president, sure, he's been ranting and raving. But there were people in key positions at the Justice Department, in the White House, the Department of Homeland Security, who were really advancing the agenda, sometimes without the broader public even fully understanding the extent of it.
John, can you just walk me through the highlights of what Trump has achieved when it comes to immigration?
It's been huge. I mean, it's been a resounding success for the nativists. The White House has passed over the last 4 years over 400 executive actions on immigration on pretty much every level of immigration policy. So, you know, the kind of big ticket stuff. The administration has decimated the refugee resettlement program. I mean, decimated it, brought it from, you know, a country that used to settle, you know, about 80,000 people a year in the U.S. to less than 7,000 so far in the current fiscal year. They've completely undone the asylum system at the border through a combination of measures, but most notably in the form of shunting 60,000 people into Mexico, where they're just stuck waiting for asylum hearings that now, because of the pandemic, will never happen. They have cut deals with governments in the region to try to actually outsource the responsibility of providing asylum to Central American governments rather than the U.S. itself. They've chipped away at legal immigration in the form of green cards and visas. I mean, the list goes on, and it's going to be extremely hard to undo and to reconfigure.
Why is that? Let's say Joe Biden wins. Why is it hard to reconfigure and reverse that?
For one thing, just the sheer volume of things the Trump administration has done has made it difficult. There's just going to be a lot of stuff for a new administration to undertake. But most specifically, the Trump administration got smarter over the last 4 years. You know, it began with all of the pageantry and high drama of executive orders. Those are relatively easy to undo. But over time, the White House got more sophisticated in how it unveiled certain policies. So, for example, they started to move to rule changes, regulations, kind of layered rule changes across different government departments. A huge policy for this White House has been a thing called the public charge rule, which pretty much isn't just an assault on legal immigration in the U.S. It is actually a wholesale reimagining of who is allowed to become a legal immigrant in the U.S. The public charge rule would use immigrants' financial status to determine whether or not they qualify for green cards and eventually citizenship. You know, in 2017, how would Trump have wanted to do this? He would have wanted to pass an executive order, signed it with a Sharpie, kind of made a big show of it. But in fact, by the time this thing came out in 2019 in the form of a regulation basically proposed by the Department of Homeland Security, there were also three or four other forms of this policy being pushed through on different levels at the State Department, the Social Security Administration, Housing and Urban Development, various presidential proclamations that also layered in different aspects of this policy.
But why can't they be reversed?
I think all of them, you know, rules and regulations are harder to undo, especially if they've been set in motion in the right way. Some of these things require notice and comment period. You know, things have to be taken under advisement. And what's also happened simultaneous to all of this is, of course, the president has named a vast number of judges to the appellate bench. So in the past, in the early years of the Trump administration, when you had federal judges at least putting the brakes on some of these policies, now you don't even have that. And they've actually decimated the departments themselves that are supposed to be carrying out this work.
One of the talking points I see all the time on social media in particular is that deportations remain much higher during the Obama administration, during the Trump administration. Is that simply because there are just far fewer people getting into the country in the first place?
Yeah, it's a combination of things, and it's a complex and interesting question. I mean, for one thing, because the Obama administration had priorities for who it went after, who it was going to arrest, why it was going to arrest those people, people with criminal records, people who had recently arrived in the country as opposed to people who had spent many years here and had families, there was more efficiency built into the system. This has been, by comparison, a kind of chaos. One of the first things the Trump administration did in 2017 was it eliminated priorities for who ICE was supposed to go after. And so if no one's a priority, then everyone's a priority, which leads to a kind of chaos. And so what you saw in the early years of the Trump administration was arrests soared. And specifically arrests of people who did not have criminal backgrounds. The number of people in ICE detention shot up, but the deportations themselves didn't. You also had a major border crisis, and that meant that ICE officers who ordinarily would be policing the interior suddenly had to go to the border and were tasked with dealing with families arriving and seeking asylum. So that set them back a bit. You've also had more of an organized resistance to the Trump administration than you ever really did under Obama. So, for example, sanctuary jurisdictions, cities, municipalities, localities, states have banded together and refused to cooperate with federal immigration authorities. You didn't have that level of coordination during the Obama years. And actually, that accounts for a significant number of deportations, because in effect, you know, if a city or a state is cooperating with federal immigration authorities, it makes it much easier for ICE to arrest people. They just go to a jail. These people are already in detention, and they just take them into ICE custody. So there are all of these different things that have led to the deportation numbers being lower under Trump.
So, John, how significant of a loss for Trump was the fight on DACA?
Of course, it's hugely embarrassing to the administration, especially because they came into office, these guys. This is Jeff Sessions, who then was the attorney general, and Stephen Miller, the top White House counselor, all with the fantasy of ending DACA. And so here you have them basically, you know, starting in on one of the signature policies they wanted to undo. And, you know, they basically whiff after 3 years of it. I do think that the fate of Dreamers remains very much in the balance. And so the reason why I hesitate to say it's a total loss for Trump is, if the intention was to inflict pain, and I think people in his administration who wanted to end DACA wanted to end DACA to send a message and to put this population back in legal limbo. And in that sense, they succeeded, because this population is now very much waiting on pins and needles to see what happens with a new administration and whether Congress can actually codify protections in law for them. You know, importantly, after that Supreme Court ruling, DHS came around and said, look, we will continue to process the applications that had already been filed, but we will not accept new applications. The language of the Supreme Court ruling makes pretty clear that the government has to accept new applications. So even after that Supreme Court ruling, it was quite shocking, and I think pretty typical of where the Department of Homeland Security is now, that the response from the administration to the Supreme Court was to say simply, well, we're not so sure we're going to follow the whole letter of the law here. That's something obviously to continue to watch.
Jonathan Blitzer, thank you so much.
Thanks, David.
Jonathan Blitzer covers immigration for The New Yorker, and you can find everything that he's written about child detention, Stephen Miller, and much more at newyorker.com.